This is News Talk 1590 KBTA. I'm Lynn Fairley, and this is the Lynn Fairley and Fabulous Friend Show. You know, I have a varied show. Every week I have somebody different, and it's a surprise, and very often I don't meet that person before we put them on the air. That's why this show sounds often very spontaneous. My guest today is an author of a book. His name is Roy Nelson, and he's written a very, very interesting book called Love Notes from Hell. Is that correct, Roy?
That's right.
And this is the theme song he picked. You know, I usually start my show with my new friend's theme song, and we'll ask him why he picked this as soon as you hear a little bit of it. Here it is.
The orchid is a flower that blooms so tenderly. To thrill the fairest lady of the land. It placed beside a blushing rose, the rose could not compare. But how was such as I to understand?
Why did you pick that song?
I think it's a beautiful country love song.
It is indeed. And you're from Kansas City, is that right?
Are
you
Texas,
from Texas?
Originally,
Texas. You were born in Texas, and you were raised there. Stayed there for how long?
Well, I left there the day I was 17 to go to the Army, and I've lived there a few different times since, and short stays, stationed at Fort Hood back in the 60s with the 1st Armored Division, and when I was going overseas after I was married, I left my wife and children with my sister in Texas while I was gone. And then another time, I went there to some business.
And here you are in the lovely city in the county of Ventura. Welcome. Welcome to my show. Recently, you had a big event at the Beverly Hills Women's Club. I think it was just a few days ago, correct?
Yes, it's true. Mm-hmm.
And on this kind of flyer sort of press release thing I got, it says, everyone has vices. Mm-hmm. It seems like you're the vice doctor. Those negative habits we use when life gets stressful and when we need relief. Some of these vices to the extreme are, let's say, food, drugs, sex, alcohol, gambling, shopping, or maybe even some other activity or substance abuse that causes untold suffering. Those who try to overcome their addictions may spend years in and out of treatment programs, 12-step rooms, therapy, and the like, but continue to struggle. This is when you like them. You like them at their wit's end. When they've tried everything, done everything, can't stop, and they've got a whole circle of enablers around them that they're, in, you know, kind of wagon circled around them, and that's when you want them. I know you take them before that because you'd rather them not go through all that struggling. But you yourself have been through this, which makes it more authentic to those of us who have a hard time finding therapists because you want someone who's been in the trenches with you, speaking of armed forces. And you've been there and back, which is why I think you chose the title Love Notes from Hell, because you've been to hell and back. And that's not a city in Texas.
It's very, very true, although there are some cities in Texas that will compare. But yeah, it's true. It's an insidious condition, and it hurts. It really, really hurts. And unfortunately, most of us have no idea what's hurting. We just know we're hurting.
Yes, yes, that's an interesting point in your book. It's an extremely interesting book. I have the book here in the studio, and this lovely gentleman is on the front, and he looks well-worn and very at peace at the same time. It's a cute picture of you, sir, and I know that's a visual for radio. But it's a story of hopeless addiction, hopeless addiction, obsession, and then ultimately freedom, written in three parts. How did it go at the Beverly Hills Women's Club? Was it mostly ladies, by the way?
No, we had a full house. Actually, every kind of, just from all mixes, we had a lot of men and a lot of women, a lot of couples, and it was very good.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that because I was kind of scrolling around really late at night, actually, looking at a lot of what you have online. And normally in the front row of the pictures that I see you in, or where you're standing and making a presentation, is a long row of really hot women in short skirts and heels and so on. I thought, I wonder if that's your audience.
Well, it's interesting. There are a lot of women who come, for the help we give because I provide because, you know, it's women traditionally are more likely to seek help than men, and that's across the board, whether it's therapy or anything else. You know, they're always looking for help for their eating and their weight and their eating disorders.
Or drinking or shopping or what have you.
Exactly.
Well, that's what intrigued me about you, because this is a little bit of a different type of interview that I normally do.
Mm-hmm.
There was a couple of reasons why it was sort of providence that brought us together. And I felt that hearing this from a man would be very interesting. And I believe, according to our Nielsen ratings, that our general audience out there is a little few more men than women. It's almost half and half, but generally we have more men listening than we do women. So I would encourage you to address the men during this hour.
Absolutely.
Because we want to figure out why they're less likely to look for therapy and why that could be a fallacy. And how you can help them overcome or just cross that bridge and feel a little bit more comfortable asking for therapy. Never mind going out to read your book, because you address both men and women, children,
exactly,
grandparents, enablers, and everybody else in between. Mm-hmm. In the book, he discusses finding total freedom, no matter how deep the addiction. No one is alone in their fight, guys. How to identify the right treatments, healing the underlying causes and the root of the issue. And this is all formulated into something called the Nelson Method. The Nelson Method. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am, that's correct.
Method. Mm-hmm. 28 Days to Freedom, what it is and why it works. Now, 28 days after years and years and years of addiction sounds bogus. It sounds like, how could that possibly be done in 28 days?
Well, we're never done. That's the important thing. There's no arrival. I've been on this path for many years, and I'm free of all the addictions, obsession, compulsions. But what we're really talking about is a new way of living that will lead us to a new way of thinking that will lead us to a new world.
And that's done in 28 days, that reprogramming, if you will?
Well, we start the process. I mean, basically, the 28 days is learning the new way of living. The addiction is not the problem. The addiction is a snowflake on the tip of the iceberg. It's the addiction, and it's never just one addiction. You know, you may only be aware of one. In fact, many of us are not aware of any addictions. I had a hard time accepting that I had any addictions, because they were spread around, and I was functional, and I was, you know, still making money and still living in the big house and still living the big life, but I was dying.
And living the big lie as well.
The lie, exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I found that interesting in your book, that there are usually layers and layers and layers of addiction. That's that iceberg. And underneath that, the root of the problem is quite subconscious.
Absolutely.
Now, I find that there's another thing I do besides radio, and I don't talk about this very often, if ever, on the radio, in fact, and that is that I'm a clinical hypnotherapist, and I have been for years. And I also have very quick successes, and I believe it's possible to do that in 28 days or less, or maybe 35 or 32 days or 2 months or what have you, if you do get to the root of the problem. And the root of the problem, being subconscious, is hard to locate, hard to figure out,
exactly,
particularly if you've got layers and layers of addictions masking it and or really handy to fall upon. And I therefore address on the very first consultation that someone has with me as a clinical therapist, the issue of sabotage. Okay, now I posted up on Facebook about this show, and one of the things I posted up last night and this morning was, tune in and listen to yourself, Roy Nelson, the author of Love Notes from Hell. But we're going to dig into sabotage a little bit. Now, sabotage has a secondary gain. Usually you're sabotaging yourself for a darn good reason. You've convinced yourself that secondary gain in the act of sabotage is more important than being well.
Well, my experience is every addiction is made up of three components. First, it's a painkiller. And two, it's a form of escape. Number three, it's a form of punishment. Now, my experience is, as long as I had the pain, I would crave the painkillers. And I'm saying painkillers, I don't mean pills. I mean, it could be pills, but it could be a myriad of things.
Yeah, shopping online.
Absolutely. As long as I had the pain, I was going to crave the painkillers. As long as I had the fear, I was going to crave escape. And as long as I had the guilt, I was going to demand punishment.
That's and your that's, where that's the sabotage, your pep. That's the, your pep talk.
Yes,
right,
ma'am.
P-E-P is what that stands for. That's quite the pep talk.
But that's where the sabotage comes from, is the guilt.
Okay, there we go. So we're on the topic that really, really matters. That's the root of the problem. Are we all feeling guilty about something or another? Because you start out by saying we all have vices. So if we all have vices, are we all feeling a little guilty about something?
Well, the race consciousness, the whole human race, to some degree or another, has a fevered, terrified imagination about God.
A fevered, terrified imagination about God. It isn't always terrified. Sometimes they're awestruck.
Now remember, I said to some degree
or
other. To some
degree, right.
Okay.
Okay.
Now I'm not suggesting everybody's religiously insane like I was. I'm saying that I'm saying if you grew up in where I grew up in Texas and what they were teaching, you
the Bible Belt.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes, that could be terrifying.
Right. And it was, by the way. For a terrified little kid, very sensitive little kid, I took it all on.
You're going to hell, aren't you?
For sure, and I went exactly there, right? But so I walked away from it when I, you know, grew into my early teens. I thought I would walked away from it, and I went as far as I could in the opposite direction, but that didn't pay off very well either. So ultimately, I had to go back and face what was troubling me deep inside.
Okay, so let's go back. That was my next journey, was mm-hmm. going back in time to mm-hmm. your youth. Mm-hmm. And you say you went through it, you got to your teens and felt that you were going actually to the other end of it, the exact opposite end of it, mm-hmm. but you carried with you some degree of guilt
mm-hmm.
that didn't. So is that why you think it didn't work? In other words,
well,
what was it you carried with you into your beyond your teens where you thought you were going the other direction, away from religion, that is, and came full circle back to addiction?
Well, we've all heard the saying, you can take the boy out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the boy.
We have.
And my experience is you can take that religious insanity, you can take the kid out of the religious insanity, but you can't take the religious insanity out of the kid without going back and doing the excavation. Now, you do that in your hypnosis work, and I do that in my work, and I've had a lot of hypnosis in my past. Back in the day when William Bryan, who was a medical doctor, was teaching other medical doctors to use hypnosis in their practice back in the 70s. By the way, Dr. Bryan died at 48 years old, morbidly obese, of a massive heart attack.
Oh,
so,
what a shame.
But he could actually, and then we'll digress into that, but he hypnotized himself and so he could have an appendectomy without anesthesia.
Oops.
So he was that kind of, he had that kind of power to do that, okay. But overcoming the addictions is a whole nother level.
Mm. Yeah, let me put a caveat in here, just insert this early in the show, and that is the type of thing we're talking about. Addictions of any kind, food, sex, alcohol, drugs, you must consult a doctor. We are not here to pretend that medical advice isn't required at all times when you're dealing with addictions. For example, it's imperative to put a child on heroin into a methadone program. Mm. There's just no way around that. It's unfortunate that they have to become addicted to another drug, but they will be off heroin. So we can't not have that sort of caveat just set down early in the show that you do speak to your doctor about these type of things. Hypnotherapy does work very, very well in concert with what you do, diet, good living, exercise, and all these things we all know about. Mm-hmm. Okay? Just wanted to insert that there.
I'm glad you did. We have several doctors that we refer out to mm-hmm. for various medical problems. However, as far as overcoming the condition that we've suffered from, there's no medical solution mm-hmm. in our experience. Mm-hmm. That's why back in the 30s, the Alcoholics Anonymous program came into being, because doctors, the best doctors they could find, and they couldn't help them stop drinking.
Mm-hmm.
and they helped him in many other ways, but it required a spiritual experience to overcome.
It does, not an insanely religious experience, but a spiritual. How would you delineate that? Let's take your insane religion sort of definition next to your religion, your definition of spirituality. How do they differ?
Well, it's often said that religion is for people who don't want to go to hell, and spirituality is those for people who have been there and want to get out of it.
That's a clever one. That sounds kind of country, like lyrics to a brand new song. That's very funny. That's great. Mm. That simplifies it, doesn't it? Yes, very simple. Interesting. Well, in your book, I looked at it again last night, and I liked the way you simplified your contents, the list of what you look at. The first introduction about the human condition is something very, very interesting to read, because we all share this worldwide, species-wide, race-wide, country-wide, language, doesn't matter. We all share the human condition. Mm-hmm. And that is that, yes, we can go to our doctor all day long, but unless we have other people in our lives to help us talk to each other, and that's what we're doing today, talking on this radio show. You are listening to 1590 KBGA about these type of things, so we can air them out and we can help and we can communicate. So understanding is part one in the book. And you talk about your religious upbringing and your alcoholic father. Now, that's where we kind of left off in your scenario when you were a teenager. Mm-hmm. And would you say, because that's so high on your hit list here, that was the beginning and the root of most of your problems, the absolute unbearable chaos and abuse that goes with living with an alcoholic parent?
Well, it is, although, you know, there are people who come to me who didn't grow up in that, in those circumstances.
Indeed, but we're talking about you and your book right at the moment. But you're right.
Yeah.
Parentheses.
Okay.
You and your book, would you believe, do you think that was the beginning of and the cause of or the root of most of your problems? Because how do you defend against that when you're 4, 5, 6, 7 years old?
Well, you don't. I mean, obviously, it certainly is a big part of it, you know, question.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I was a very sensitive little kid. And that means I sucked everything. I absorbed everything, and I was very afraid. And I almost suffocated at birth, so I started off being terrified.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I had the umbilical cord wrapped around my throat at birth. I always say I kind of almost died at birth, and then it went downhill from there. So.
Oh, my word. Interesting.
Yeah, so I've been terrified as far as back as I can remember. And then, of course, I learned a lot more things to be afraid of in my growing up area, being the worst, I think, all of it is being taught to be afraid of God.
I'll be interested. Now, back to God and religious insanity. Mm-hmm. Did the training, did the religious insanity make you more or less afraid of God? And when you say afraid of God, how does that work with sort of denying religion, in a sense? Because religious insanity sounds like a denial.
Well, the best hope I had, based on the information I had about God, the best hope I had would be that there was no God, because there's no way on earth I could measure up to and follow all those rules.
Oh, and if there's no God, there's no hell?
Well, yeah, you know, but the problem is, you know, like I said, it doesn't, as the famous carpenter said, it's what we think in our heart. It's what we believe in our subconscious mind is what's going to manifest in our lives.
And being a hypnotherapist, I do work with that very, very concept.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
I know later on your book, and we'll get to that part in your book that does talk about religion a little bit. So you unravel religion, and then you put it all back together again.
Well,
which is kind of interesting.
Our process is really about unlearning, okay? Mm. And again, in my experience, religion puts you to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
It puts you to sleep spiritually, and it puts you to sleep sexually.
Mm-hmm.
And the primary thing that they taught, as far as I can tell, is that the sexuality is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more it's bad, the more obsessed you become with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you can make it okay, then the obsession goes away. Mm-hmm. So what I do now has nothing to do with religion at all, and has everything to do with spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you know, but again, but the whole process is unlearning. It's, you know, you don't, in my experience, you don't have to go looking for the truth. You look for the myth. You face down the myth. You face down the untruth. The truth will be in your face.
Yeah, that's similar to how they work in hypnotherapy, where you get to the secondary gain and sabotage, mm-hmm. face that, and now you can't sabotage anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. But if someone's not willing to face that, boy, you go around in circles for a while.
Right.
Or you're just not the person for them that's going to be able to help them.
Yeah.
And then you
yeah.
refer out like you do to various different doctors.
Absolutely.
Or the therapists
yeah.
and so
yeah.
forth. So you took refuge in food, drinking, sex addiction, love addiction, loneliness, panic, phobias, and fear. Congratulations. You've been to hell and back.
Cigarettes, drove big cars, chased fast women. I was a workaholic once I realized I could make some money working.
And this is just part one of the book.
But you know, it began as fantasy. Fantasy is the first addiction, the first obsession that most everybody experiences is that some other, when the here and now is so terrible, we go to there and then and look someplace else and fantasizing about that wonderful life or that wonderful whatever.
Well, we're also bombarded by images, and now more than ever, what is it we see and we process, whether we know it or not, something like 100,000 bits of information a day or more,
mm-hmm.
depending
mm-hmm.
on how active you are on social media or watching television or reading, whatever you do.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine how much you're bombarded with, what Hollywood wants us to think about
right.
sex, love, addiction, fast cars, drugs, and just keeping us fairly numb,
yeah.
I would say, and on track to be a good little consumer and go out and buy all that crap.
Bright and shiny objects that move fast.
Yes. And even though I don't have, I probably have an addiction to chocolate, I would admit right here in front of everyone. But I am not a drinker, and I don't suffer from some of these
mm-hmm.
other ones that you did have.
Oh,
I like bright, shiny objects, I will admit.
Well, the important thing to know is we're not here to indict anybody. It's not a problem unless it's a problem. You know,
yes.
And each person has to decide for themselves if, you know, everybody pays a price.
Yes.
Everybody on this earth pays a price. We get certain perceived benefits, we pay a certain price. And nobody can say what should be valuable to someone else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, part two is called Awakening. And this is where you, after you tell your story, which is fascinating, really,
mm-hmm.
part two is the true nature of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty, maybe we'll really dig into that a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
When past efforts have failed, on the go or on the run, enabling, which is a huge topic, because some people can be addicted to enabling.
No doubt.
Because that will justify their picture in the party of guilt, if you will.
We call it the dance of death.
Yeah, enabling is probably one of the biggest problems for the addicted person.
Yeah.
Because they will play that enabler every
mm-hmm.
way to Sunday. Yeah,
absolutely.
Absolutely. I had a friend recently who's young kid, unfortunately, by the way, in the United States, and this is also in Canada, North America, heroin use of younger kids, young boys and girls in their teens and through their 20s is an all-time high.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very savvy. They'll ask their parents to go buy them vapes, the new vaporized cigarettes,
mm-hmm.
so that they can boil down heroin, make
mm-hmm.
it into an oil, and put it into the vape and
mm-hmm.
smoke it that
mm-hmm.
way. And the parent thinks, oh, they're getting off of cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
I just learned that the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how wily and how manipulative they will be with someone they recognize as an enabler.
Mm-hmm.
And they can see you coming
yeah.
100 miles away.
That's so true.
And you're going to get played. And so an enabler has a different kind of an addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the enabler needs to be helped more, if not as much, as the addicted.
Invariably, when people come to me about their spouses or their children or somebody else, I invariably tell them, you need to get some help for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
mm-hmm.
you see, the addicted child or the spouse is addicted to the substance, and the enabler is addicted to the addict.
Yes, addicted to the addict.
Mm-hmm.
Great, great one. That's a tough one to unravel,
mm-hmm.
very, because
mm-hmm.
their guilt is often larger than the person who's addicted.
Absolutely.
Guilt,
absolutely.
Which is where it starts.
I've been down that road.
Oh, man. Then you get into sexual insanity, which is very interesting. What's in your heart, and what price are you willing to pay? That's called awakening, and that's part two. Now, what we do at this time in my show, and we're going to come back and start with the true nature of addiction when we come back, is we think of it. Each and every one of my shows. And we do that with the Shoemaker Brothers. And I'm going to read something a little bit different today than I normally do. And we're going to thank a veteran.
a dancing girl. Fell so hard that it rocked my world. Headed off to a place in Iraq, and that man that she loved never made it back. Take me out on a starry night, butterfly under my thumb. If you come out and play with me, you'll dance to the beat of my drum. I get addicted to the rhythm of the fight.
All right, today I'm doing something a little bit different. Somebody gave me something very, very cool. It's kind of old. It's called The Pocketbook of Patriotism. I thought that was so clever. And someone gave it to me just recently. It was Captain Fisk on Memorial Day. And in the contents are the timeline of American and world history. It's a very small little hardback book. Speeches, charters, significant documents, songs, poems, verse, the United States presidents, the states in order of joining the Union, what is patriotism, medals for valor, flag tradition and etiquette, which I read. And it's fun because all the little snippets and quotes and so forth and all the history. In fact, Spence, you would enjoy this because there's a lot of stuff in here by date. It relates to our Constitution class that you might find handy.
How nice.
Yes, it is
all
nice.
In one little book.
All in one little teeny tiny hard covered book. And today's veteran happens to be my guest, Roy Nelson. Tell us a little bit more about your station, your title, what you did, where you went, who you were enlisted with, and how it helped you in the long run.
Okay, well, good. Well, I joined the military as a buck private the day I was 17, went to the Army, traveled to Fort Ord, California for training, and then to Fort Lee, Virginia for a second base, and then to Fort Hood, Texas. I served with the 1st Armored Division, and we deployed for the Cuban crisis for Jack Kennedy, 1962, and shortly after that, I went to Korea to join with the 1st Cavalry Division on the DMZ in Korea, and after that, I went to Europe and served with the 14th Armored Cav Regiment on the border in Europe, came back to the U.S. and became a drill sergeant at Fort Lewis, did that for a time, and then I went to Saudi Arabia, Dahran, for my last little tour.
How many tours is that? 4?
7 years, 8 months, and 20 days.
To the minute. Thank you, sir,
Thank
for
you,
your
ma'am.
Service. That's an awful lot of time spent in a lot of action, a lot of places. Everywhere you went, there was something going on there.
Went in as a private, came out as a staff sergeant, E6.
You know, you look a little bit like that classic drill sergeant in those movies, the guy who really can be confrontational. Then, so you've got this one side of you. Mm-hmm. It is not apparent when you first meet this gentleman. Mm-hmm. I know there's a visual for radio, but he. Now that you said that, I see the drill sergeant lurking around in there. Does that help you in your therapy sometimes when you get to the point where you have somebody who wants to whine and be enabled or enabling, where you can just sort of go, all right, that's it. You're done. We're getting down to business, and you do the whole drill sergeant on them.
I don't know. I don't remotely resemble the person I was in those days.
Surely,
but,
no, not at
know,
all. No.
I don't mean just because of the physical, but I mean just I'm a different person. You know, and that's what, in my experience, I had to become a different person because the person I was would always have the problems I had.
Oh, very interesting. So did they escalate, because there's a lot of drinking, a lot of alcohol available. Did all that escalate then?
Absolutely. Oh. And then I was always working with people a lot older than me. I went in young, and I made rank fast. I mean, I was a sergeant by the time I was over 2 years in service, and then 4 years I was staff sergeant, or a little under 5. But the thing is, I was always working with people a lot older than me, so it didn't seem like my drinking or my carousing was that much worse than anybody else's, although they were 15, 20 years older than me. And same when I got out and started in the business world, I was 26 or 24 years old, and the other people were old. They were 40, you know.
Oh, over the hill.
So anyway, that's kind of how it happens, you know. You never know. You don't realize you have a problem till long after you have a problem.
Or you know. There's an inkling inside the back of your head. You actually do know. That's part of that subconscious function that lays in wait. You know, I give out the crisis line. You can always get that from the station by calling News Talk 1590 KBTA. But today I'm also going to give you our veterans, the County Veterans Health Department here, right here in Ventura County is absolutely amazing. It's I don't know if you know this. You can call 211. That's all you need to dial. 211 is a confidential and available and is available 24 hours a day in 150 languages. You can get counseling, food assistance, domestic violence assistance, employment resources, healthcare, senior services, legal assistance, substance abuse services, resource for parents, housing, and so much more. 211 Ventura County is a program of Interface Children and Family Services in partnership with the United Way. That I just ran into. So you can get the crisis line I always give out for veterans, but I thought I'd tell you something new. Call 211 for any one of those services. They also speak your language, 150 of them. All right, so where we left off with my guest, if you're just tuning in, he's Roy Nelson, and he's written a very, very interesting book. Is this your first book?
This is my first book, yes.
This is your first book. All right.
30 years in the making.
What took you so long?
30 years in the making.
Yeah, what took you so long? Because it's a very valuable book, as far as I can tell. And I am going to read it now, front to cover, since I have the actual book, because it's a little hard to read online. I have the whole thing online. We probably have a caller, which would be something to do. This is a perfect time to take a caller. If you don't mind, while we're waiting for our caller, I'm going to give you a pair of headsets.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see if I got the little thing to plug it in. We have a caller?
Yes, we do.
All right, caller, hi. I am Lynn Fairley.
Hello.
Thank
hi,
you.
Lynn.
Hi, thank you for calling. What is your name, please?
This is Telly.
Telly?
Yes.
What a cute name. Okay, Telly.
Oh, thank you.
I am giving our guest a headset to plug in right underneath you, sir. You'll find it. And that way you'll be able to hear the caller. And the volume control is also right there as well, so you can test the volume when you put your headphones on. Telly, how do you know Roy Nelson?
Hi. Well, you know, I am just listening in and really speaking to me, and I have a question that's a little personal and was hoping if I could get some answers.
You got it. But Telly, good thing you didn't tell us your last name and or where you live, because there could be any number of thousands and thousands of people listening. So
absolutely.
As personal as it is, realize this is a public radio station.
Sure.
All right. With that caveat, here you go, Roy Nelson. Telly, okay. What's your question?
Hi, Roy.
Hi, Telly.
Well, I'm just listening to you, and it's kind of speaking to me, and I'm going through some stuff myself. I work in advertising. Everything in my life should be okay, but I suffer from emotional eating. I binge, and I binge, and I don't know how to stop. I don't know. I've tried dieting, I've tried stopping, and it's emotional. I know it is, but I just don't know what to do about it. And I'm wondering if that's something you work with, if you help people who suffer from binging and emotional eating and things like that.
Absolutely, Telly. And I just want you to know I so empathize with you. I have been morbidly obese myself and completely hopelessly addicted to food. And you know, my experience is that my only hope is that obsession and compulsion be removed, because in and of myself, I don't have the power to resist it. And my experience is that is what happens when the people I work with, usually within the first or second meeting, their obsession and their compulsion to overeat is removed.
Wow.
And beyond that, of course, they start losing weight. But then, you see, then the underlying issues start surfacing. And that's what I'm about. See, I'm not really about treating the addiction, because the addiction is only a symptom. The addiction is what we use to try to cope with the problem. And usually, see, otherwise, if you could get a death grip on the food and lose weight, then invariably it'll break out in other addictions. because you know, unless it's like trying to hold a dozen beach balls underwater. You can get half a dozen under, and then the other half a dozen pop to the surface. See, this is why we have to deflate them. And this is what we do, and the work I do is we deal with the underlying causes of the addictions, and then you don't have to have any addiction.
Telly, are you ready to face your underlying causes, or do you even know what they are?
I think I'm ready to face them, but I don't know what they are.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot that it could be.
Yeah, well, it's all good. And, you know, the important thing to understand is that, first off, it's not your fault. It's not your fault that you're having trouble with emotional eating.
It's not my fault.
It's not your fault. But the second thing beyond that is this is literally a condition that if you address it, really address it. Now, there's a lot of places you can go that'll try to help you get in control of the food. But that the food isn't your problem. Invariably, people with eating problems think food is their problem, and they think getting a death grip on the food is going to make the problem go away. But that's not true. But what happens is, see, if you would let me into your heart, then your obsession to overeat would be removed. You'd lose an appetite. You'd lose your appetite for things that aren't good for you and amounts that aren't good for you. And you'd be given an appetite for things that are good for you in the amounts that are good for you. And then you can look at the real problem.
Now, okay. I heard something resonate there when you repeated, "It's not my fault." Somehow or another, that rang a bell for you.
I would never have thought that. I mean, in my mind, of course, it's my fault. What am I doing? Mm-hmm. I just have felt lost for so long. So,
well, yeah, I understand that, sweetheart, but you're beating yourself. You're just beating yourself. You're beating yourself, and then you're beating yourself with food on top of the beating yourself.
And you called the show, which is huge. That's huge. The fact that you reached out, you are at your wit's end. You are ready. You can accept it's not your fault.
Yeah.
You will be able to hear that. Keep that mantra in your head. Every time you feel like you want to eat, go ahead, eat. But each time you do that, remember what we told you today. It is not your fault, and you are ready for help. Mm-hmm. That is a huge step you've just taken. Congratulations.
Yeah.
You're awesome.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah.
You are. You are for calling. It's a scary thing to do. But reaching out and calling is the first thing you have to do. And you're calling a radio show, which is huge. I really appreciate you listening very, very much. And we will make sure that Roy Nelson's in touch with you after the show. And
very good. And
this book is great, by the way. And you will see pictures of him very obese, very, very, very obese, very overweight, very ill, addicted to everything and more. It's kind of surprising he's sitting here as well and as thin and as fit as he is. It's just like mind-boggling that it's the same guy. I was looking like to see if it was touched up. Mm. It's not touched up. Mm-hmm. He was a big dude. And he is no longer. All right, so I think you'll get a lot out of the book as well. But we'll be sure. Spence, could you put her on hold and jot down her number just in case we don't have it? And here, I'll give you a little piece of paper to do that. And we'll put you back in touch. Telly, did you have anything else you wanted to say?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I'm in shock. This is the first time I felt hopeful in a long time. I'm excited to hear more. So thank you for having him on. Thank you, Roy, for speaking with me.
I'm so glad you called. I appreciate you. Thank you.
It's our pleasure. Thank you for calling. Thank you. And stay tuned. You're listening to News Talk 1590 KVTA. I'm Lynn Fairley. Mm-hmm. Telly, you're awesome. Spence is going to take your number, so hold on. All right. Wow, that was very cool. Okay, so you're going to dig into the root of her addiction there. Mm-hmm. And I think you hit on something there when you said it wasn't your fault. Do you often do that when you have somebody new? You take down their defenses by saying it's not your fault?
Well, it isn't our fault.
Most of the time, unless we are in fact the guilty party.
Well, the important thing is we once we know there's a solution, then it's our response. If we continue on, then it's on us. But how we got there, there's no way on earth that I could have had power over this condition in my conscious mind. I mean, there's no hope. I mean, hopeless. And and so, you know, it's if I decided to continue on back out there now, then that would be, obviously, the repercussions would come fast.
Absolutely.
Because once you know there's a better way and don't take it, then that's a whole different situation.
As far as you are into this wellness, do you still have cravings for any of the above things we mentioned, whether it's drinking, sex, love, loneliness, or rather not loneliness, panic attacks, what have you? Do you still have cravings that you have to overcome?
Not really. I mean, I work on a daily basis to to connect with that sweet spirit within to the degree that I can each day, and I'm an eager student. I haven't arrived by any stretch of the imagination. But I'm a seeker. I'm an eager student.
You're a seeker. Well, there's your homework, Spence. Find a song about seeking, and we'll be able to close with that. Something upbeat and really very cool. Spence is the master of music here, well, and talking. But he's the master of finding very cool songs.
Dolly Parton's got a good one. She's a seeker. I'm a seeker.
Dolly Parton's got a new one called The Seeker?
It's not new, but it's a good one.
All right, there we go. There's something to consider. Good deal. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about enabling and then sexual insanity.
Mm-hmm.
We touched on enabling for a second. Mm-hmm. Let's say Telly has a whole bunch of enablers around her. Doesn't sound like she really needs one because she's got a good grip on the refrigerator door. But what if she did have someone else who eats with her and brings her ice cream, brings her cake? She's found a bunch of buddies to eat with. How would you help her?
Well, she would have to decide how valuable, you know, each person has to decide if she's okay. If you're okay with what you're getting, just keep doing what you're doing. If you want to get something different, you got to do something different. And my experience is you have to do everything different.
Well, yeah, she's clearly not okay with what she's doing.
Well, clearly,
yeah.
But I'm just saying, but my point is that'll be up to her if she wants to be free. And freedom is not free.
No, and what price do you pay is a part of your book, and that and sometimes it means you end friendships, and that's a price to pay.
Well, my experience is the key is being willing to let it be however it's going to be, because if you're willing to flow with the recovery process, it'll happen in an orderly way. In other words, nothing has to be torn from you, and nothing has to be forced on you. It'll happen in an orderly, loving, peaceful way if you let it.
I agree with that. If you don't shred people and force things on them, they will excuse certain friendships on their own in a very, very nice, natural way.
Absolutely.
Or the friendships will just drop off.
It just loses. You know.
I had a good friend stop drinking recently, and he had to go tell his best friends he could not go out to dinner with them anymore. That lunch would do it. They were devastated, and they really, really tried to rally him for, oh, come on, and, you know, what have you, but he's sticking with it. Do we have another call? No. We don't. Okay, phone rang, but we're somebody different. Spence very popular. Now, are there some people that you're, and I know I just took a detour, but some popped in my mind, are there some people your method cannot help?
Well, if everything's cool already, I mean, if, you know, the proof's in the pudding, if they already have a happy life and great marriage and great family and great kids and great job and, you know, they're, you know, ideal weight and they're not hurting themselves in any way, then they don't need me.
All right. But they may need you for friends, family, neighbors.
Well, that's the whole thing. In fact, that's mostly what we are, the reason we do what we do is contacting and as much as we can, letting as many people as possible know about the work I do, because invariably somebody always, most everybody knows somebody who needs help.
Yeah, yes, indeed. And when you're well, it's more fun to help people.
Absolutely.
It really is. It's something I like to do.
Absolutely.
Relatively well.
Of course.
So, sexual insanity, that's sort of the hot topic. What do you mean by sexual insanity? And I noticed there's a trademark next to that in the book.
Well, along with the religious insanity comes sexual insanity.
Hand in hand or not necessarily?
Hand in hand.
Hand in hand.
Because what happens is the more you think something isn't okay, the more obsessed you become with it. It's
right.
Like a volcano. The more you push it down, push it down, push it, push it down, the more pressure is there.
That's such a strange little widget in the human personality, isn't
it? Yeah. But, you know, the thing is, in my experience, it manifests itself in different ways. Alcoholics and drug addicts use alcohol and drugs to facilitate the sexual obsession, the sexual drive. And compulsive eaters use food to pack it down, to bury it. And they invariably, most of us have vacillated between being completely asexual to being totally promiscuous.
Mm.
And we do the promiscuous thing until that we create enough guilt and remorse or problems or whatever, then we revert back to being asexual, and usually by getting married. Getting married is a good way to become asexual.
Ending your sex life.
and if getting married didn't do the job, just have a kid, that'll damn sure do it.
Yes, it will. That's really funny. So, yeah, sexual insanity, there you have it.
But what we found is that you can make peace with the sexuality so that you don't have to be promiscuous and you don't have to be a prude. You can be peaceful with it.
And have sex joyously.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there we go.
As it was intended to be.
Yes, it was. All right, part three in your book. We've covered part one and two. One was understanding, awakening, and then part three is called freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and in that section is freedom, the value of weakness, which is very interesting, about God, who you are, the journey of self-esteem, relationships, forgiveness, writing, reading, talking, meditation, and prayer. Mm-hmm. Now, we're here doing the talking part.
Okay.
Tell me a little bit about the value of weakness. That's the most interesting bit I read in that section.
A dear friend used to say to me that her weakness was her greatest strength, and her strength was her greatest weakness.
All right, let's flesh that out.
Okay, well, as long as I think I can beat this thing on my own, I'm doomed to failure.
Mm. So that's acknowledging the weakness.
Yes, ma'am.
But that's similar to the Alcoholics Anonymous, give yourself up to a higher
the
power.
The principles are the same. And they didn't originate with Alcoholics Anonymous. They did a good job of packaging them.
Yes, they did.
But they didn't originate there. In fact, it began with back in. There is no beginning. The principles are like the principles of chemistry. They never were not. I mean, they were always there. It's just we didn't quite understand
yes.
them. But they, you know, they go back for thousands of years. But Mr. Frank Buckman in the early 20s was the originator of that, the Oxford Group movement, which is a forerunner of Alcoholics Anonymous.
I remember reading that somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, and he was an Episcopal priest in Philadelphia running a shelter for boys, and his board of directors kept cutting his food budget, and he kept getting more and more angry at him. Finally, he got so mad he left, went to England, and he couldn't get his life together because he was harboring all that resentment, harboring all that bitterness inside.
Mm.
Finally, he had a change of heart, and he wrote six letters to these gentlemen, these board of directors, apologizing for his attitude, and that was the beginning of the Oxford Group movement, which is what the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous were involved in before it morphed into Alcoholics Anonymous.
And that is one of the ones that has been truly helpful worldwide.
Yeah, absolutely.
Since then, in all languages, in every corner of the world, you can find a meeting. I've traveled all over the world, and then again.
Yeah.
And I always look at the newspaper when I get in town, and it always astonishes me. And I'm never looking for a meeting.
Yeah.
But it's right there.
They have
around the corner or nearby, there's a meeting. And I think that's really an incredible network, all done without the internet.
Absolutely. Well, I'm telling you that they have been the most single, and certainly people have gotten sober by other means.
Sure.
But they have been the single most successful therapy for helping alcoholics stop drinking in the history of the world.
Yeah.
In the history of the world.
Yeah. And then they've got Drugs Anonymous that's helping.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
Enablers
yeah.
Anonymous
right,
and Anonymous
yeah. right,
Anonymous.
Right, exactly. A lot of spinoffs.
And all the spinoffs that are equally
none of them
helpful.
Are as successful as Alcoholics Anonymous. Mm-hmm. And even then, a very small portion of the people who go there get sober and stay sober, because it's such an, and there's no reflection on Alcoholics Anonymous. It's an insidious condition,
mm-hmm.
an insidious condition.
Truly.
And usually people who have drinking problems think drinking is their problem.
Yes, and so weakness is more their problem, and admitting their weakness is one of the first steps, as well as recognizing the secondary gain and sabotage.
Right. Well, recently you've heard people, you know, people who've been celebrities have been sober for 20 years.
Go offline.
And go back out, because the thing is, if they don't deal with the underlying issues, mm-hmm. and that's what we're about, what I'm about, if you don't deal with the underlying issues, it's really just a matter of time. It's like taking morphine away from somebody with a gunshot wound to the belly.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't do something about that wound, they're going to have it again.
Yeah, same with the methadone treatment they found that
absolutely.
Helps heroin.
Yeah,
it's a must. It's mandatory.
Yeah.
It's very, very, very interesting. This is a huge topic.
Mm-hmm.
It would be good to have you back in a while.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to know how they can find your book, so you must have a website. Please recite it at least twice.
Yes, ma'am. It's roynelsonhealing.com. That's roynelsonhealing.com.
So R-O-Y-N-E-L-S-O-N, healing.
Yes, ma'am.
Very good.
And
is there a phone number?
It's 800-609-4061.
Let's have that one more time.
800-609-4061.
Excellent. Okay. And there is that 24/7?
24/7. And you may get a voicemail, but we'll be back in touch with you very shortly if you call, and email will be very quickly responded to. Beyond that, there's an addictive personality quiz on my website.
Oh, yes, that's fun.
If they would like to look at that, go to roynelsonhealing.com/quiz. And you can also order my book, Roy, on the same website. It'll take you to Amazon, and that's Love Notes from Hell down to the bottom of the page.
It's a very, very interesting book. It's there are a lot of books about this type of topics. They're all timely. They're all helpful. Yours is very interesting because you cover so much in just one book, and it's concise, and it's divided into these three really easy to understand parts. So I like the format of the book because you can kind of almost start anywhere in there and get help right there. And you don't have to read it front to back. It's better if you do so. But it's a very easy, user-friendly, sort of intuitive book, too. Mm-hmm. So good for you. This is well done.
Well, thank you.
And now I see why it took 30 years.
Many people read it through and then use it as a daily reader after that. And in fact, a lot of the people I've worked with contact me and say, yeah, I'm using it as a daily reader.
I can see why.
Mm-hmm.
I can see why.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the phone rang again. Was that for us? My goodness, we had all kinds of phone calls today that were unrelated. Again, we wanted to thank Telly for calling because that was really timely, and I do believe Telly will be helped.
Mm-hmm.
Telly, you believe you will be helped. If you're still listening, I think you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Roy Nelson, we're coming right up to the end of our show. Spence, did you have a comment or a question?
Well, we did have one anonymous caller, appropriately, who said they thoroughly enjoyed the program.
Oh, how nice.
So it's very, very well. But they didn't, you know how it is.
Of course.
Anonymous is part of the whole deal.
Of course.
Well, it is, actually. And your privacy is respected and protected by Roy
Absolutely.
Nelson.
Absolutely.
He observes all HIPAA regulations in his work as well. I'll look forward to getting to know you a little better myself.
That's another point that's really important I wanted to make real quickly here.
Sure.
On the website and in the book, you'll hear some stories of some people I've worked with. But please understand, these are people who want to be part of the outreach and have volunteered to have their video and their stories published. But we have complete privacy for anybody who wants it.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody would ever know that you've been getting help if you come to us.
Naturally. Naturally. Thank you again. Get it. Love Notes from Hell. You can find it on Amazon. Go on over to that website, which is
roynelsonhealing.com/take-the-quiz.
It's pretty hilarious. I took the quiz. I had fun. I'm addicted to chocolate. 110%.
Enjoy.
Dark chocolate. Thank you very much for coming on the show. You've been listening to News Talk 1590 KVTA. Next week's show will be very, very interesting. I have Judge Colleen Toy White coming on to talk about the Veterans Court. something I've been trying to get for almost 2 years. So I will hope that you'll tune in again to 1590 AM. This is Lynn Fairley. Stay tuned for Horsepower for an hour.
I am a seeker, a poor sinful creature. There is none weaker than I am. I am a seeker, and you are a teacher. You are a reacher, so